Blog Talk Radio.
Truth Be Told Radio. Join us once again for the radio show that gives you teaching and preaching from a biblical perspective.
The Truth Be Told Radio. I'm your host, Moses Cantrella, and today our guest is Kamal Salim, former Muslim terrorist and who is now Christian. Recently also, I was looking at his website and the one for the ministry, and actually it got hacked and says it's a Turkish hacker. If it's still like that, don't click on any link, because it's probably malicious. I want to say some things about, he has a book called The Blood of Lambs, and today we're going to be interviewing him. And let's see, first we're going to take a break, find out more about us at truthbetoldradio.com, and thanks for listening.
The Way of the Master Minute. Here's Kurt Cameron and Ray Comfort.
Here is a biblical formula for success for the Christian. Meditate on God's Word every day. Have you ever gone for a day when you've been too busy or forgotten to read the Bible? Have you ever gone for a day when you've been too busy or forgotten to feed your stomach? Which comes first, your Bible or your belly? Be like Job, who esteemed the words of his mouth more than his necessary food.
You have the promise in the first Psalm that if you meditate on the law of God, both day and night, that you will be fruitful, and whatever you do will prosper. And that's not just for your marriage or your job, it's also for your evangelistic efforts. Say to yourself, no Bible, no breakfast. No read, no feed.
There goes another minute. Gone forever. Go share your faith while you still have time.
Brought to you by WayOfTheMasterRadio.com.
Do you dig the doctrines of grace? Do 5-point tulips make you stand up and shout amen? Are you praying for a Proverbs 31 woman or an Ephesians 5 man? Then check out WretchedHarmony.com. We're new, we're free, and we're here for Christian singles seeking to serve Christ and find godly mates. We're starting up weekly studies in biblical manhood for the fellas and biblical womanhood for the ladies. Come check us out, wretchedharmony.com, for God-honoring marriages.
Proverbs 15:13 says, "A happy heart makes the face cheerful." That's the power of comedy. It has the power to tear down barriers and to bring people together. For over two decades, Christian comedian Nazareth has been making audiences laugh.
Like poor countries, they don't have junk food. They're always fighting. Wherever there's a Burger King, there's peace. Because after eating a double whopper, you don't want to fight.
Nazareth was born in the biblical town of Nazareth and grew up in Kuwait.
Someone had the nerve to take me to a zoo, a small zoo. I paid $20 to see an elephant, a camel, a bull, and a donkey. In my country, that's a car dealership.
After several years of living in America and experiencing worldly success but no happiness, a Christian comedian introduced him to Christ, and Nazareth has been using his comedy for the kingdom ever since. If you're looking for a powerful outreach tool to touch church members and those who wouldn't ordinarily set foot in a church, consider Nazareth. Find out more today by going to www.nazarethusa.com or by calling 1-866-9-LAUGHS.
You're listening to Truth Be Told Radio.
Welcome back to Truth Be Told Radio. I'm your host, Moses Cantrella. Today we have former Kamal Saleem, now Christian, and we are going to have him on, and we're going to be discussing about him and his testimony. And if you have any other questions for him, please call at 347-884-9505, 347-884-9505, and you should call in, or also you could, we have a chat room open, and you could ask questions in there. Please do that soon, and thank you for us and Truth Be Told Radio. And, see, did I bring him on now? Let's see, well, trying to get us the.
This come off the link to anybody.
Yes. Sorry, I was trying to bring you on, and it because it was on mute. So you're here now.
Absolutely, I was
okay,
here.
Did you discover that, like I said earlier, that your ministry website it was hacked?
I just clicked there, and I just saw it because I heard you saying this,
yes,
and it's hacked by Turkish government.
Yeah, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah,
yeah, it's definitely Turkish revolution, the Turkish government, Islamic revolution. That's what it says in Turkish.
Oh, yeah, I was going to, because I was looking up to try to get some more ideas for questions to ask you, and then so I just discovered that. I was like, what is this? At first I thought I went to the wrong page, and then so I looked it up on, like, Google, and then I was like, no, that's right. And, well, it's probably good not to click, like I said, click on any links because it might be something like even worse on that end.
Yes, so, don't go in there.
Yes. So thank you for joining me. And like I saw, it said you have a book called Blood of the Lambs.
Yeah, the Blood of Lambs.
Yeah, and so. The first part, I want you to please talk about your testimony.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I am thankful to be talking to you and your audience that would take the time to listen to us. To God be the glory. We are thankful for what God is doing and allowing us to be part of your day.
Thank you. And where would you like to start off?
Well, I can talk a little bit about my past, my childhood, and you let me know if you, ask me question as I'm going there, if you like.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll start take you on my story, on my biography in a way, which is, it's in the book, The Blood of Lambs. I was born in Beirut to a Muslim Sunni family. And in that place, we didn't have a lot, but we had the love of Allah. We were very poor. I didn't know that we were poor. In that house over there where I lived, we had three-room house, kitchen, a bedroom, and a living room, and 14 brothers and sisters. We're Muslim Sunnis, and which is different from the Shia. We grew up on the stories of, Muhammad, the Futuhat al-Islamiyya, which is, the Islamic war and how we conquered the world by the sword of Islam, and how, his Khalifa, from Abu Bakr al-Siddiq to Ali bin Abi Talib, to Umar bin Khattab, Osman bin Affan, Ali bin Abi Talib, all these Khalifa, how they conquered the world by the sword of Islam in the name of Jihad. So I was growing up, learning from my mother that my biggest, my greatest goal in life is to die for the sake of Allah. My mom told me from my childhood, she said, my son, one day you will die for the sake of Allah. And because the purity of your heart, you will see the glory of God because you will die and you will let the name of Islam be known. By the time I was 5 years old, in the Islamic term, when a child is growing, by the time he reaches a Muslim child, by the time he reaches 10 years old, by then the child recited the Quran, three times, and must know, according to the teaching hadith by Muhammad, the hadith is the biography, the all things, you know, which is what brings Sharia law. Hadith is part of everything Muhammad commanded, to do and what you do not do. So with this, we were learning, it is our job to learn the Quran and, and the hadith said, "علموا أولادكم السباحة والرماية وركوب الخيل وعلموا أولادكم لغة أعدائكم," which is teach your children how to shoot, to kill, and how to ride, the horse, which is translated today, a form of weaponology, and also how to surprise your enemy from wrong places and learn your enemy's political understanding and also their languages, so you will know what your enemy are up to, so you can, that you can take them by surprise. So I was growing up, by the hadith, and learning from my mom as I was reciting the Quran. The Quran is the holy book of Islam. As I was reciting, the Quran before her, and we were reading from Surah Zulzula, which is the earthquake. Surah means book, which is like equal to Book of John, or something like this. Surah means always book. So as I was reading in the surah, it says, "فَمَنْ يَعْمَلَ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ خَيْرًا يَرَى وَمَنْ يَعْمَلَ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ شَرًّا يَرَى." Number one, what I learned is whatever you do, small or big, you'll see it in your lifetime, bad or good. So my dad gave the biggest lesson, one of the most important lessons in my life. He said, "Allah will weigh your work on a scale, and based on that, you either go to heaven or you go to hell." So I was learning from my father right now, and I was looking up to my mom and my father, which is they gave me life, and I was going there, and life was really, I was growing up there, and my favorite place was in the kitchen, because this is where I learned everything, what I'm going to be. My mother said, "My son, if you kill a Jew, your hand will light up before the throne of Allah that you have killed Jew, and the host of heaven will celebrate your victory." And she was teaching me about, all Islamization. My mother was an Ottoman Turk. An Ottoman Turk, which is, her father took off from Turkey in 1924. This is when the Khalifa, the sword of Khalifa, was abolished in Turkey, which is the Islamic world were not allowed anymore to fight and kill by the sword of Islam, and so all him and his friend, they scattered all over the world, and he came and hid in Lebanon. And in Lebanon, this is where he had my mother, and he imparted to her the Zealot Islam, and all my nine uncles, and all my aunts, the seven aunts that he had, I had a slew of them. So we were learning Zealot Islam from our childhood. And from there, as I was growing and what so have you, and we came to learn from the Quran that, the only, it says, "وَلَا تَحْسَبَنَّ الَّذِينَ قُتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أَمْوَاتًا بَلْ أَحْيَانًا عَنْ رَبِّهِمْ يَرْزَقُونَ." The Holy Quran says that, those who died for the sake of Allah, they are not dead but alive and prospering before the throne of Allah. Therefore, my dad gave a great lesson that day, and he said, "These are the only people that they can enter heaven without judgment, the martyrs. This is the one they're allowed to go to heaven without permission to go to hell, So now, because they died for the sake of Allah, and the lesson was, is the first drop of your blood, you become an intercessor for your immediate family of 70 people of your immediate family. And so you become like a messiah to them, interceding for their life, so they didn't have to be judged by your blood. You died for them, so now they're free. The second drop of blood, you get 72 virgin women, and with every woman you get 72 virgin women, and God will give you a horsepower of 90 horsepower that you can, you have, the ultimate strength and power in heaven to sleep with all those virgins." And I made a mistake. I said, "Well, Dad, my mom, you only have a mom, my mom, and you're having a problem with her every day. How are you going to handle the 72 virgins? And with every 72, And my dad didn't know what to say. He looked at me as a child, and he said, "The grace of Allah is sufficient. Allah is the God of Islam." So with this, I learned from my childhood that, sufficiency is in Allah if you follow and you become obedient. So now it's Islam by work. And as we continue to read from the Holy Quran, we learned, وَكُلُّ مِنْكُمْ وَارِدُهَا. Every Muslim will have to go to hell first and purify, and then they will go to heaven. One Allah, that is Firdaus, we call it, you know, paradise. Then Allah, if he desires to forgive them, then he will let them. Otherwise, if he doesn't, then they will not go to heaven. They will stay in hell, you know, even, you know, whatever their circumstances may be. So I learned the only way to make it to heaven without judgment is really to die for the sake of Allah. So in my childhood, I was meditating all the time on how I'm going to fight, how I'm going to kill Jew, where I'm practicing on different things. And in my head, I was going, you know, leaning toward those stories, and I'm going to be really a martyr, you know, someday. And I made a mistake, you know, one day I said, Dad, if my mom dies for the sake of Allah as a martyr, will she get 72 male men, you know, male versions?
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, this is when I learned my first lesson, that you never question Islam, you never ask anything, you know, of Islam, something like this. So with this, what happened is my dad, really, he was a blacksmith, and his hand transformed my life. He just hit me right in the face where I hit the wall and hit the ground, and learned never to ask questions like this before, because he didn't have the answer. You know, to ask, you know, nor does Islam have an answer for something like this, because the Holy Quran says the fuel of hell is made of women. You know, hell is definitely has more women than men, you know, and heaven was made for men and hell was made for women, you know, the way my dad explained it to me later on. So now I'm learning from all this, and I'm growing up. And with all this, one day I started going to the mosque, attending mosque, and there's a group called the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the root of all evil. Al-Qaeda came from them. Al-Shabaab came from them. Al-Muhajirun came from them. ISMA came from them. CARE came from them. You know, it's an organization that has many tentacles up front, that has different names, but at the end, it's Muslim Brotherhood. They came in 1928. In 1928, the Muslim Brotherhood, they came back to bring about the Khalifa. Because the Muslim in their world at that time, they are not allowed to fight according to the teaching of whether Shia or Sunni. It goes from Khalifa to Imam. It goes different, you know, but unless they have a leader, and when they have it, like Iran has a leader right now. And the leader, the Imam, it will lead them to war, but the Sunnis, they're waiting for the Khalifa to come about to lead them. You know, with this, they organize, you know, OIC, which is Organization Islamic Council, waiting for their Imam to come about and lead them, their Khalifa. So with this, the Khalifa is the inheritor of Muhammad, who brings about the life of Muhammad, the understanding of Muhammad, everything what Muhammad says to do or not, and bring about Sharia law and a war of Islam. So the group took me under their arm, and I was learning from them from my childhood how to change the Western civilization. We were learning from our childhood how we'll do the third jihad, which is our final jihad, where we'll confront the whole world. And by confronting the whole world will be subdued into Islamization. You either become Muslim, or you either die, or you either become enslaved and pay taxation, which is called jizya, penalty taxation. So with this, I was learning from all this as I'm a child and moving in that understanding, you know, and now they were teaching us how to obtain American citizen, for example, or European citizen. For American citizen is you obtain first the student visa. Next thing you obtain, you know, you marry an American woman, because it's legal to marry an American, non-Muslim woman for a Muslim man. And you can marry up to four women, you know, so it's your legal right to marry and divorce in a span of 5 years, you know, one woman at a time, and marry another one, because that's your legal right. So, and with this, you obtain the citizenship, and then you can use the constitution of that civilization and use it against the civilization itself. So now I'm learning from all this. As a child, this is my school called Madrasa. In a Madrasa, I was learning how to bring about the barbaric crusaders, you know, fortresses down and what so have you. And from there, as I was 7 years old, one day the whole group, you know, Abu Hamza came to our mosque, you know, and Abu Hamza from the PLO, he came and he spoke, and Abu Yusuf was with him, and Abu Yusuf spoke. Both of them are big leader, you know, for Yasser Arafat, you know, and they spoke. They said, you know, Islam is you know, is not by the holy word, but only also by the holy sword, which is, you know, you have to obtain both powers. So with this, you could not be a complete Muslim until you learn how to use your sword. So the whole group went and joined the PLO. At that time, the PLO used to call Fatah. It was not called the PLO because Yasser Arafat was only over a group called Fatah at that time, which is a name from the Quran, you know, from a surah, from a book. And I was learning from there and went to the training camp. 7 years old, I went on full assault, you know, learning how to shoot mortars, how to mix chemicals, how to detonate TNT blocks, how to bring buildings down, how to espionage different things. We were learning everything at young age. That's my school. And from there, I went on my first mission to Syria. We went to the Golan Heights in Syria, and from Syria we went under, you know, there were underground tunnels in the Golan Heights manifested inside Israel. We were dressed like Bedouin children with knapsacks on our back, you know, and we rendezvoused with the shepherds, and we gave them the, you know, bombs, the guns, the ammo, and the shepherds fed them belly of the sheep and went to Israel to do their missions, you know, and these called Fida'iyin. Fida'iyin are the martyrs at that time that they fought, you know, to kill and kill herself, you know, and that was the first things, you know, what Yasser Arafat was introducing to Islam to bring about, you know, martyrism. So when I came back home, I was hailed as a hero because my first mission was very successful. From there, I went on my second mission. This time, I was a recruiter, and I recruited my best friend, Muhammad. Muhammad was my next-door neighbor. I promised his mom, Fatima, I'll bring him back alive. Muhammad was older than me. After he went to training camp in Sabra and Shatila, you know, with me, what happened is we went to Syria this time, and we were trying to do the same mission, but this time it was an ambush. Unfortunately, when we came over the hill descending down, we found the shepherd and the sheep were slaughtered completely. And then the enemy, our enemy at that time, Israel, start hitting us with everything. And my young friends, all the young boys, started crying for their mom. And, you know, they start taking, you know, bullets and, you know, bomb was cutting through them left and right, you know. And that day, Muhammad took shrapnel, went through his esophagus, and Muhammad fell to the ground, and I started crying with a loud voice. Not you, Muhammad. I promise your mom I'll bring you back home alive. This was my first crude awakening to see how what happened, you know, to in all this. That day I was crying, Mama, myself. I threw Muhammad on my back like we were taught, you know, and I was running toward the Syrian border, and Muhammad was taking shrapnel for me, you know, and was taking, you know, bullets for me as a sniper trying to hit me as I'm running back. The boy I'm supposed to save saved my life. So when I came home, I was the first time in my life learned that this is death. This is not, you know, it's nothing, you know, it's exciting, you know, carrying gun and scare people. This is a real thing. From there, I met Yasser Arafat for the first time. And for the first time, I was awarded because I was the only child that returned back from that mission. I was awarded by Yasser Arafat where he put, you know, a medal on my neck. And he said, it's children like Kamal Faleem that they will change and change the future of the civilization. Jerusalem is our target, and we will have Jerusalem by the help of Allah and help of children like Kamal. This is how my story started. From there, my story escalated. And I worked, you know, I started going up and started becoming more radical and become more infamous. And I was working indirectly for Saddam Hussein and indirectly for Hafez al-Assad, dictator of Syria and Iraq. And from there, I went, you know, to Libya, you know, and in Libya, I worked for, you know, Muammar al-Qaddafi. Muammar al-Qaddafi treated me like a father. I stayed, you know, and we were training people from all over the world. We opened the biggest, you know, terror university in the world over there, to train people all over the world, whether from South America or United States of America or Africa or wherever it may be, as long as they want to learn how to terrorize for their countries, you know. As long as we cause an issue shaking the world's going to need us because we become the teachers. So from there, I went to Europe to do the first mission, which is called Culture Jihad, which is to do a war, not by the sword, but by changing the culture from within, to take the people of culture and change their identities, their ideologies, their academia, their politics, their media, their governments, their finances, you know, to impact their world and bring about, bring about the presence of Islam, just as the Western civilization, destroyed our world, and that's how we felt, you know, and because as long as Islam is not ruling, then, you know, they are in control of our world. They're protecting Saudi Arabia, our holy land, and now our presence is very important to be in their civilization and bring to them, to the Western civilization, an answer, as Islam is the answer to all their misery, to all their troubles. So with this, as long as there are problems over there in Europe, I found there's a lot of problems that, you know, they don't need, you know, anything to bring the culture down. The culture was already facing all kind of giants. So with this, what happened is I was really finding that Europe so easy to seize. From there, you know, I was working for the Saudis, you know, and the Saudi was financing all my work. Saudi Arabia was the most generous country to me, beside Kuwait and UAE, and Bahrain, all those, you know, oil country. The petrodollar was great, great financing to me, you know, and we were raising, my first check when I was young teenager was $70,000, and that was in early 70s. And from there, we raised millions, you know, because that's, they want that culture, jihad, to take place. You know, many people say, well, jihad is something to battle against self. Yes, it is to battle against self. But Muhammad, when he went to war, even in Hadith, al-Shafi'i, you know, he said, ila al-jihad, as he was going to fight for war. These are the words of Muhammad by the Hadith itself. So now, I'm learning and I'm growing. And, and I got out my call from Saudi Arabia that the war is escalating, you know, little by little, and the Soviet Union took over Afghanistan. And America is start moving toward Afghan to help the Afghani, you know, Mujahideen over there. And the Mujahideen were not trained. They didn't know what to do. And they were afraid that America will win the war, you know, and the whole Muslim world will see that the Crusaders saved them one more time against, you know, against the enemy. So Saudi Arabia, I got my order to take, you know, heat-seeking missiles, which is we obtained from Syria, and we went all the way through Iraq, and we sailed by, you know, those, you know, big, you know, yacht of Saudi, you know, prince, all the way to Pakistan, and from Pakistan we went all the way to Kandahar, and from Kandahar to Tora Bora, and we taught the Mujahideen how to shoot heat-seeking missiles. We were really, destroying the Russian machine, from tanks, from choppers, from Sukhoi bombers, to you name it, to their, you know, MiGs. We're bringing everything down. You know, those heat-seeking missiles were effective. And the Americans saw that, you know, we were trying to enter that market, and America brought about the American, you know, Stinger missiles, you know, to help the Afghani. And then the war went to a new level, which is we could not, you know, take, because America was now coming in. So I got my order from Saudi Arabia is to go to America while America is fighting in a Muslim country, is for us to come and fight in America. And what we're bringing with us this time is called what's so-called stealth jihad. The jihad that nobody understands, that nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody will come to fathom. We had agenda, we have, you know, units, we have, you know, different people all over the country. Majority of them came as students, you know. Some of them came from the Canadian border. Some of them came from the south border, the Mexican borders, you know. And, you know, it was about $70,000, you know, for terrorists to cross over, you know, with the help of a certain group, you know. And So therefore, we were working in the United States of America. You know, I was, at that time, I obtained my paperwork, you know, through a student, you know, visas, and we were working and we were changing the American culture. Our favorite places were the jail system, the poor neighborhood, the colleges, you know, universities. And we had two front groups, you know, they have two different names. Both of them were a radical organization in the name of peace. We're changing the universities. We obtained and we brought about complete understanding, and now they have different understanding, Muslim Student Association and Muslim Student Union. Both of them obtained, you know, the Muslim Youth of America, the identity of Muslim Youth of America, which is now you see with ISNA, and supported by CARE, which is, you know, contributor to one another. And with this, we came to America and we were helping, you know, we had two purposes. The first one in university is to recruit young American men and let them know, you know, that, you know, our religion is the same thing like your religion. We worship the same God. There's no difference. You know, yours is called Christianity, ours is called Islam. And what so have you see in Islam, when I was a little young boy, my mother taught me about the two kind of sins. In the sins, there's white sins and there's dark sins. The dark sins is when you lie about yourself. The white sin is when you lie to advance Islamization of a culture. And then we also learned about something long time ago from the Muslim Brotherhood, that when you enter a civilization, what happens is you befriend them until you take over their culture. And as long as the civilization, it is not a Christian civilization, the children belong to you, the women belong to you, the financing belong to you, the homes belong to you, the government belong to you, the land belong to you, the men, they either become Muslim or they either get killed. And so therefore, this is how you take over a culture. So basically, and we have a doctrine which is came from surah in the Holy Quran. It's from surah called Al-Ahzab. And this is the parties, which is when Muhammad, the prophet of Islam, went to fight the Meccans, which is the Quraysh tribes, his uncles, his, you know, his cousins, all of them. And he wanted to destroy Mecca. You know, he came from Medina. And when he came over there, you know, he sent his spies, and he told them to go spy for him. They said, well, you kill people like us, because if we go there, we have to lie about you. And you kill people who lies about you. He said, whatever you say for the sake of Allah, for the sake of Islam, for my sake, it is completely forgiven. And now it is Sharia law doctrine to lie to the enemy for the sake of advancing Islamization. Now, many Muslims will tell you this is only if you get in trouble and they're going to kill you. But that's not true. That is deeper. It is to advance Islamization. It's fully permitted, and it's been used in many different battles throughout the generations, the world history. So with this, I was growing up, and I was becoming stronger. You know, at the end, you know. So now you see, like John the Taliban. You know, he was recruited from UC Irvine. He was fighting in Tora Bora against the American soldiers. He was fighting with the Taliban. You know, he was recruited by the Muslim Brotherhood right here in UC Irvine. And then, you know, there's several other students. You know, in the jail system, statistically, it shows there's about 2,000 men has been recruited in jail system, and they are today fighting, you know, because obtaining the American citizen, that's what the Islamists need, because with the American passport, a Muslim with the American passport can travel anywhere, you know, some places without a visa. Therefore, they can move and do what they need to do, to advance, you know, terrorism. So, and the girls, we married them, and number one, number two, we turned them, we made them Muslim, we made sure that they become Muslim. It's a commandment. Although the Muslim woman, if she marry an American man, she will be condemned to honor killing, which is her head will have to be cut off or severed, you know, or cut, you know, in honor killing. Last year, over 6,000 women all over the world were killed by honor killing. Several of them here in the United States of America, the Houston taxi driver who killed both his daughters, shot them in the head in a hotel room because they went on a date on a New Year's Eve with two boys. And we can't forget about the TV station general manager from Iran who beheaded his wife, or the imam in in Dearborn who severed his daughter's head, and he called 911. And when they came to arrest him, he said, "I've done nothing wrong." And, you know, the story goes on. There is several killings, you know, all of it on Google, you know. Everything that I'm saying, you know, you can Google it and you can find it there. So now we change in the American culture, and when women become Muslim, now, you know, the children are Muslim. In the Muslim faith, all the children goes to the father. They don't go to the mother. So therefore, if a woman disobey her husband, he can take her to Mideast, and she will never be able to come return to the United States because they will have her in a house arrest, and the American family will never see the grandchildren. And this is happening by the hundreds of thousands here in the United States of America. And that's the second part, you know, so we're getting our citizenship through American women. And from there, we went to the jail system, and we taught the hate agenda, and we brought about, you know, many people, angry people, to use their anger, to use it to bring about Islamization as a hope and as salvation to them. And from there, we went to the poor neighborhoods. We fed the poor. We hired their children to work for us, and we were changing the culture little by little. We're befriending everybody, you know, and our job and, you know, our work is to create a chain of masjid, which is mosques. The mosques were chained all over the United States of America because this is where we slept. We moved from place to place, and nobody knew where we were. They could not trace us through, you know, hotels or anything like this, and we have safe houses all over the United States of America. Yes, the FBI knows about this. I've done full reports with them. And with this, you know, we were escalating and moving forward, you know, changing the American culture. And then one day I was driving in a car, and I had a severe car wreck. This guy, you know, came and hit the brakes in front of me, and I hit my car brakes, and my car went to the other side of the road, and I was embraced by an 18-wheeler. My car was twisted just like croissant. And the T-top was open that day. It was a beautiful summer day. And I ejected out of the car after in the air and landed on my head and neck, fractured my neck in two places. And I was in deep pain, upside down in a mud hole. And this man came running to me, and he started saying, you know, everything's going to be all right. We're going to take care of you, and everything's going to be all right. When I looked at him, I found out, you know, that this guy was smiling and assuring me that he's going to take care of me, and he kept referring to himself as, "We are going to take care of you." And I was wondering in my head, who are we? And, you know, and with this, he blocked the sun from my face, took his T-shirt off, dried the mud from my face, and he kept smiling at me, assuring me everything's going to be all right. The ambulance comes in, takes me to the hospital. I arrive to the hospital, to the ER room. In the emergency room, this doctor, orthopedic surgeon, starts reading my chart. Your name is Kamal Salim. You're a French citizen. You're this and this. You didn't have no family, no friends, no insurance, no debt. You know, and he said, "You're in trouble." But he smiled with his little face, and he said, "Son, we're going to take care of you, and everything's going to be all right." And now, as you know, when you are doing intelligent, you know, harvesting, you know, when you harvesting intelligence about the nation, and all of a sudden you hear the same language being spoke to you, you find out that you've been scoped now, that they know stuff about you, and they speak in the same language that you don't understand. Yes, because they speak in a language above my understanding. "Son, we're going to take care of you, and everything's going to be all right." Assurance, comfort, love, and, you know, and they don't know him from Adam, so that was scary. Because in a terrorist world, when we say we're going to take care of you, you run away because that means we're going to kill you. Huh. In a Christian world, I learned that, you know, if they said we're going to take care of you, you are in for a treat. The second day I wake up in a hospital, and this doctor is the head of physical therapy. He comes in, read my chart, and he says, "Dude, you're in deep, deep, deep trouble." He said, "But you know what? We're going to take care of you, and everything's going to be all right." And I'm going, who are these people? And then it came to my understanding that the jinn has found me. The demons knows who I am, and they really want to take care of me, and that taking care of me, they want to kill me. And now it's fearing for my life. You see, in a terrorist world, unlike the American armies, in the American armies, it says no soldier left behind. That means if whether you're dead, injured, scarred, they bring you back home. In the terrorism work, if you're left behind, you have to find your way home because you cannot expose the whole cell. You know, and, you know, it's the law of the strong, not the law of the weak. You know, in Christianity, it says, you know, to take care of the weak, take care of the one who left behind, the orphan, the hungry, the this, the that. The other one is the strong is we need to be, you know, showing strength. So therefore, you could not weaken out. So if you get injured, you find your way back home without exposing the whole thing, even if you have to put yourself to death to save the whole cell. So now I'm listening to all this, and I'm going, wow, this is, you know, demonic, you know, the jinn has found me, demonic activity is after me now. On the fifth day, these men come to, you know, the first man come to meet me on the street. He came to visit me, and he's taking care of me that day. And he learned, he started learning how I'm feeling and what so have you, and then the orthopedic surgeon walks in. And instead of saying, good morning, Kamal, he looked at this guy in the face and he calls him by name. And he said, so and so, what are you doing here? He said, oh, this is the man I told you about. This is the man that I spoke to you about. So the doctor said to him, I told you about him first. So the man said, I met him on the street. I took care of him over there. The other guy said, well, I took him in the surgery to the surgery room. So they start fighting who told who. To make the story even worse, you know, the third man walked in, the physical therapist, doctor, and he called the other two guys by name, and I'm going, that's not good. These guys know each other so well, and now they're hugging each other, kissing each other, and, you know, talking about, you know, God bless you, Jesus, that this, you know, and I'm going, oh, my God, they're not just Christians, they're foofy Christians. They hug and kiss and tell each other, I love you, you know. Take your hand off him when you kiss him and hug him. Don't tell him, you know, it's not kosher. You know, don't tell him you love him while you're kissing him. That's not right. In my world, this is not manly. So now I go, the orthopedic surgeon wins me and takes me to his home, and now his wife is a head nurse at one time. Taking care of me. They put me in the biggest room in the house. The bed was so big. It was one of those rice beds. You have, you know, ladder to climb up there, you know, those steps. The mattress is feathered down. The room is just so big. I never seen a room like this. All my life I slept on the floor to be like my prophet, the prophet of Islam, Muhammad, where he slept and put a rock under his head because he was a warrior. And now I'm put in a bed that I don't deserve to be in. And the first time in my life, I felt what heaven will be like. Three little kids climb on the bed, and they start calling me, welcome home, Uncle Kamal. Welcome home, Uncle Kamal. And I start screaming at them, I am not your uncle. Get off the bed, you little monkey. Get off the bed, you little monkeys. I'm screaming at them, and they, you know, they're just laughing and calling me. They thought I was joking with them. And they laid their hand on me, and they started doing the Jesus prayer. For the first time in my life, I came to understand and to know and learn there's a warrior out there that is bigger than me. And he is not carrying a sword, AK-47, or RBG, or anything, but he's carrying love. And he loved me so much that he came to reach me. And that power, that warrior, I was never trained to fight love. I was trained to fight the best of the best of the best. But this one was better than I. And that little love in the little hand conquered me to the point that I lost it and started crying. So from there, I started rooming in the house, and I found out that these people are different than our world. The husband worked with the wife. The wife worked with the husband. The husband was cleaning bathrooms, which is not kosher, man. You know, this is a woman job. You know, in my world, you know, I found the men out cooking. They're cleaning, mopping floors. They're vacuuming. They're doing different things. I'm going like, this is not right. But all of a sudden, I saw a different life, different style. I saw the father loving their children, cooking, feeding them, teaching them, working with them. And it's not like the Muslim world, they didn't do something like this, but there's an there's a different understanding. And that understanding was, it was just foreign to me that I never had before. And I saw the relationship between the husband and wife, they're equal. The wife, the husband is not bigger than his wife. And so therefore, it was just a relationship. And then the other thing, I found out that these men belong to our organization. It's a Christian businessman. And these men will come together once a week. And they will hold hands together, all those big guys, professional, successful businessmen from engineers, doctor, corporation owners, and they will pray. And they put all their issues before God. I never seen something like this. You see, in my world, on Friday, the Muslim will gather all over the world on Friday noon prayer, and we send hexes, vexes, curses against our enemy, against the seeds, against the children, against the finances, against the health, against the weapon, against the soldiers, against the government, against your food, against your water, against your every idea, against your sleep. We just hex and curse and vex and do everything so your world, you know, because in our world, 50% of the demons are Islamic. They're Muslims. So we unction our demons to contend with you, you know, because they're a Muslim. And here in this world, they have none of this. They have no hexes or curses or vexes. I'm learning something completely different. These men put me in the middle of the room without knowing who I am or what I do. And they prayed for Kamal. Lord, that you will heal Kamal. That you show Kamal a favor. That you show him your peace and you show him your love. That you give him joy. That you give him heart of flesh instead of heart of stone. Oh, Father, that you will reveal yourself to him. Oh, Jesus, that you will anoint him and bless him. Oh, Holy Spirit. And they pray in something I never understood in my life. But all of it was love, love, love. And these people, I'm going like, do you know who I am? Do you know what I could do to all of you if I'm whole by myself? And in the home over there, at that, the first night they met over there, they open a big basket. There's a card on it that says, for Kamal. Everybody starts writing checks. Everybody starts putting cash. You know, and they were putting money for Kamal to forgive my debt, for the hospital, for everything that has happened. Every week they did this. But further, they sat down and talked about their issues, and they prayed about their issues. They took their problems to God. They didn't pray against their enemy, but they prayed for their enemy. They didn't hate their enemy, but they loved their enemy. They did not, you know, speak, you know, any unkind word, but they spoke kind, loving word. And their wife sat next to them. Wow, they were equal praying. Wow, the children came in and out while we're praying. It was open to show the children. The example was being set. These people walked the Bible. The Bible is the Word of God was walking before me. They were the Word of God. They became the Bible. They became the light of God. And now everything they're doing, I'm going, wow, this is a completely different world. Because in my life, we learned that they are crusaders. They hate of Muslim. They kill Muslim. They are there. They exist to destroy our world. But now I'm seeing a world is completely different. And the second week when they came, they started doing the same thing. This time they were sharing, you know, praise report. Oh, I prayed about this last week. The second day, on Monday, what happened, this happened, and I had a breakthrough. The second one said this similar story. The third one, everybody was celebrating great stories. I'm going, what kind of magic is that? That you pray about something, and all of a sudden things happened. Wow, I want that magic. How can I have it? Can I buy it? They said, it's for free. Well, how can I obtain it? His name is Jesus. Well, I don't want him. Jesus is my enemy. Now, I'm learning, I'm seeing all this, and now these people are reading their Bible, and as they're reading the Bible, asking, you know, praying for issues, all of a sudden I hear them saying in the Bible, oh, I heard God just spoke to me. God just spoke to me. I'm going, where? They point to the Bible. I said, remember my question? I was praying for this. Here's the answer. I'm going, how can you do such a thing? What kind of magic is this? But God can speak through a word that's been written hundreds and thousands of years ago. They said, it's God, because the word is never dead. It's yesterday, today, and forever. I want it. Well, it's Jesus. Well, I don't want Jesus. Now I'm battling my understanding because I start becoming, you know, part of the household. I'm making hummus. I'm making tabbouleh. I'm making kibbeh. I'm just cooking for the family. I'm hugging everybody. They had people coming from Israel to visit. They were Jews. I hugged Jews for the first time. Now I'm just doing all kind of things. And one night, you know, they were praying. And, you know, the head of the house, you know, wife, you know, was so sick. She was running fever. Everybody gathered around her and laid hand on her and they prayed. And she was healed. The fever left her. She got up and she became Martha Stewart. She was chopping vegetables. And I'm going like, what kind of magic is this? How do you do something like this? In my world, you can't. It's Jesus. Well, I don't want him. Now, time passed, a month passed, and I came for the first time in my life to face the orthopedic surgeon, and he had a bunch of keys in his hand. He said, Kamal, you can go home now. You can go home. You're feeling a lot better. He said, this is the house keys. You can come anytime. After all, I am their babysitter now. And he said, there's an extra key. We bought you a new car. They bought me a brand new car to replace my old car.
Wow.
And I was just excited. And I said to him, I said, I'm not feeling well. Can I stay a few more weeks? He said, you're doing just fine. Now, for the first time in my life, I felt defeat. And the defeat was not defeat of war, of battle, of guns, of sword. It was my God did not come about to speak to me. The relationship that they have, I did not see it from my God. I'm confused about these people that we talk all kind of trash about them, but yet these people are the purity and the essence of love. And I'm going like, I'm confused. So I went first time my place, and I opened my door. My head was down. The place was dark and cold. The old smell was there. My old life was waiting for me to take it back again. And I went for the first time to talk to my God. And I fell on my knees facing the eastern windows. And I put my hand to the heavens. Excuse me. And I put my hands to the heavens, both of them, as I fell on my knees. And I cried out to my God, Allah, Rabbi wa Mawlai. Allah, my Lord and my King, why have you done such a thing to me? And when I say this, it's not the accident. I don't mind the accident. I don't mind dying for you. This is what I live for, to die for you. But why did you put me among Christians? I'm confused. These people are good. They're loving. They're kind. They have a relationship with their God. They cry to him, and he answers them. They ask for healing. They receive healing. These people are lovers. They are nuts. They're not smart. They don't know what's happening. But yet, they are good people. It's not what I learned. Allah, I want to have a relationship with you too. Allah, if you are real, speak to me. I want to hear your voice. Well, guess what Allah said to me, Melissa?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing. For the first time in my life, I came to know that the God that I worship, he does not speak. He does not move. He does not do anything. Everything that I've done for Islam is what I've done for Islam. Islam was not there. Where was Islam before Kamal came? So that day, I made up my mind, you know, I'm going to abhor Allah and see if I abhor him, because according to Islam, he will kill you. And I said to him, if I die today, I made up my mind that day, if Allah is not real and there's no God out there, I'm going to kill myself, because if I go back home and say this Islam thing is not real, I'll be dead. If I go to my, you know, camarade, tell him the same thing, I'll be dead. So now I don't know what to do, you know. The only thing is to challenge Allah, and if Allah real will speak to me. And I said to him, if I die today and I see your face and you say, Kamal Salim, you're going to hell because you killed yourself, the teaching of Islam, I'd rather stay in hell than being with you, because I asked you, I fought you. I want to be with you, but you did not speak. Well, Allah didn't say anything. In my distraught and my failure and my coming to know as I know, that this has no value and it is just a commotion, confusion, concoction of things which is not even real, I went to grab my gun, put it in my head, and finish the story. And as about to grab the gun, before I grabbed it, I heard a voice. First time in my life, I heard a true voice, a voice that cared for me better than my mother when I was sick with a high fever, better than my mother's voice, better than my father's voice, better than my grandmother, who loved me the most. And that voice cried to me like a father, and he said to me, Kamal, Kamal, Kamal. The Muslim, the Jews, the Christian, they cry to God of Father Abraham. Why don't you call on God of Father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? For the first time in my life, I came, fell on my knees, and I put my hands to the heaven. And I cried out with a loud, loud voice, God of Father Abraham, if you are real, would you speak to me? God of Father Abraham, if you are real, I want to know you. Well, God of Father Abraham came to the room, and he filled the room with his glory. And in his presence, there's fullness of joy, there's power, there's glory, there's healing, there is love, there's the essence of life. Everything was there with him. And as he stood there and I was on my knees, I was crying to him, who are you, my Lord? He said, I am what I am. I said, what is that supposed to mean? I'm only a Bedouin boy. I don't understand. He said, I am the Alpha. I am the Omega. I am the beginning. I am the end. I am everything that is in between. I have known you before I formed the foundation of the earth. I have loved you. I have loved you before I formed you in your mother womb. Rise up. You are my warrior. You are not their warrior. As he stood before me, in his hand, there's holes in his hand. There's holes in his feet. On his head, he wore the Jewish shawl. He dressed in a white, bright color that is light flooding off him. And as I stood there before him, my body was intact. My neck, my collarbone, my knee, my hips, my ribs, everything was intact. Behold, old and old is new. And I was completely healed in his presence. And I said to him, for the first time I came to know in my life that the creation came to know the creator. Everything that is being made in life, it knows its maker. It has the initial on it. And I knew who my maker was. And I knew that he was God. And as I looked upon his face, you know, I knew who he was. And I said to him, my Lord, I will live and die for you. He said, do not die for me. I died for you that you may live. I said, my Lord, in my zealousy, I will go and grab them by the skin of their teeth and by their eyelashes, and I will make them Christians. He said, the harvest is plentiful. The workers are few. Be an ambassador of mine. And I jumped up and down and shouted, I am the ambassador of God. And this is the first time in my life where my life changed. And all the things that has happened was completely new. And now I was walking in the light of God. And I thought I'm the only ambassador in the world. But I found millions of ambassadors out there that they don't use their ambassadorship anymore. Many churches are empty. And I found the kingdom is many people left the wall. And the walls has been breached, you know, broken, and the enemy's infiltrating. And that's how my life started, to this new level.
I was thinking, yeah, it's amazing. I was thinking one thing right now that what did you think, like, after, like, all this time, like, obviously, like, you've been, like, lied to all your life, like, what did you do when you realized that?
You cut off big time. Can you repeat that, please?
Oh, sorry. I said, what did you, what happened when you just, like, after that happened, you realized that you've been, like, lied to basically all your life, and all these things were false? Like, what'd you think?
Well, there was two sense of things. One of them was sense of relief. That's the first one, because for the first time in my life, I don't have to live by the law anymore. you know, when Israel came about, they lived by the law, and they died by the law. You know, the law was made to condemn, you know, people. And,
yeah.
You know, Christ came, and then he said, you know, for the law of the Spirit is life in Christ Jesus that set us free from the law of sin and death. So he freed us from the law of sin and death, and now we live under the precious blood of the Lamb. And we live by, you know, that he died and rose again for us in a victory that had for us. But, you know, I came to a new life, you know, here to know that I no longer have to live in that law, because Islam came to put people in bondage again and put them under law, because it's worse than the Jewish law, you know, because it condemns you to death. There's no way you could not enter hell, you know, in Islam, you know. And with this, I was really condemned, and I was I was set free from that bondage. The yoke was broken, the chains were removed, the stake was undone. And now I was released, but I don't know what to do with my freedom. The second thing, I was angry. I was so angry because I wasted years and years and years in war and doing things for something is not even real. And all of a sudden, the scheme, the enemy start being revealed is all the people that I supported, how Saddam, how many people he killed, how many Hafez al-Assad killed his own people by the millions. Saddam did too. How the civil war in Lebanon killed hundreds of thousands, nearly a million people, you know, and how, you know, the Jews and, you know, all that's been taking place all over the world, you know, and all of it for a love of money. The whole thing behind the scene was money, money, money. That's what, you know, it was greed. All those leaders were just, they don't want anybody to have the power, so they control the finances and oppress the people. Socialism is Islamism. Islam and socialism is the same. So when you see a culture is being socialized, is Islamicized easily. So with this, I'm seeing, you know, the whole Islamic world is socialized. And, you know, because it's the Islamic power in it, you know, and Sharia law. Sharia law is the constitution of Islam, which is, you know, made from the Holy Quran and from the Hadith. And this is what we were trying to bring to America, to establish Sharia law in the American Constitution, because if we can infiltrate your Constitution, we can bring about Islamization of the country, of the culture overnight, just like what's happening in Europe, specifically in England and all those other places. So now I came to a new freedom that I don't know what to do. And I came to anger I don't know what to do with. But the first thing I learned is, you know, the things that I learned in terrorism, I start using to hide myself. I was running away from the people that I was working for, that I was commanding, that I was in charge, because these people are looking for me now. And when you defect, you're just as good as dead. So I was hiding from my life, and my life started completely to a new level. But it was this time I was not on my own. God was with me. Well, before he was not.
That's amazing. One thing I was thinking also, in Islam, is any like love taught, or is it considered just like weakness, or even maybe a love between mother and child or father?
They do have love in Islam, but the unconditional love is not known in Islam, because in Islam, according to Sharia law, the only, you see, Islam means submission. It's literally mean enslavement. That's why would I say that? Because you no longer have the freedom of choice. You no longer have liberty. You no longer have pursuit of happiness. You no longer have freedom of thoughts. You no longer have the right to choose for yourself. Everything is conducted to you, because in Sharia law, in Islam, is it tells you how to live your life, how to go to the bathroom, how to blow your nose, how to sleep with your wife, how to shower, how to cut your nails, how to go to the bathroom, how to go about what to eat, what not to eat, what to look at, what not to look at, what to speak, what to pray, what to do. Nothing at all is, you know, of your own. Everything is given to you to the dot, to the T, you know. So therefore, you don't have any of this. So therefore, love was there, but the love was all conditional love based on Islam, because Islam is, you know, the highest rank. You know, you see the Sharia law is, you know, it's the constitution of Islam. It's a full government, because Islam is not a country. Islam is a nation. So you have 57 nations around the world. They're Islamic countries. All these Islamic countries are, you know, controlled and led by Islam, by that Sharia law, the majority of them. But Islam, nevertheless, on in every country. You know, and with this, what happened is, you know, the highest rank is the religion, and then the military under it, and then the, you know, the academia, then the civil, then, you know, all the judicial. All these constitutions are under, but led by the highest rank is religion. So therefore, your life, for all, what is your life is all about. You see, when we prayed in Islamic prayer, it says, "Inna salati wa nusuki wa mahiyaya wa mamati lillahi rabbil alamin la sharika lah wa bizalika umirtuhu wa ana awwal al muslimin." What does that say? In my life, my death, everything belongs to Allah. You know, everything, you know, even to the point, you know, whatever I need to do, and my life, all of it is for Allah, and I'm the first of all. And this is when we prayed, and we put our right hand over our left hand, you know, which is, this is means submission to Allah, which is we honored Allah. So when you see the American flag flying, and somebody is not putting his hand on his heart and put it right hand over the left hand on their hips, that's mean their first promise and first, you know, power is belong, you know, sovereignty is to Allah and not to the American government or American country or, you know, nation. So therefore, you know, the love is not found like, you know, unconditional love like, you know, like in Christianity.
Recently, I don't know if you've seen this video. There's a video. His name is, they call him Imam Faisal Abdul
Ra'uf.
Yeah, it says like he specifically lies and says Sharia law is just like the U.S. Constitution, and then they go through the video and they show different things like for one thing he says like that that you have like the freedom and it says there to show this lady being burned because she rejected a marriage proposal and have you seen that video?
No, but I can tell you about Imam Faisal Abdul Ra'uf. You know,
okay.
The initiative that sent him here is a Saudi initiative and you know from Indonesia, and that initiative is called the Cordoba Initiative. The Cordoba Initiative is the victory of Islam over Spain. Cordoba was a free country and was the you know, almost a center to Christianity, where Christians sailed all over the world and did many different things. And when the Muslim came and invaded Cordoba and invaded Spain, what happened is they carried, you know, over 80,000 of the leaders, you know, of the countries, and they boiled them in the city centers, life, you know, until they boiled to death. And they chopped them to pieces, and they nailed their body parts all over the city, you know, gates on the trees. And what happened is the whole culture fell. And the Islamic, when the Muslim came in there and took over, what happened is they seized the churches and turned them to mosques, and seized the synagogue and turned them to mosques. And they enslaved, you know, the people. So the, you know, the Abdul Ra'uf says, you know, this is where, you know, we can model where Christians, Jews, and Muslims live together, you know, in, you know, in love. The truth that they didn't tell you, it was they're subjugated as the Hami status. The Dahami status, which is, that's what the Muslims don't want to know what you say in Arabic. They don't want to hear you what you're saying in Arabic, but they want to let you hear what they're saying in English. The Dahami status over there, is you have three different things to do. You either become Muslim and you're free man, or you become, you continue to be, you know, Jews or Christian, but you have to wear a badge of dishonor that you are Christian or Jew, but you have to pay penalty taxation. It's called jizya. Or the third, what happened is you get killed if you don't want to pay this. So it's one of those three choices. So when they took over, Cordoba, Barcelona, Madrid, all over, they changed the culture. And the culture was so enslaved that the massacre was so big because many people refused, and this is the Cordoba Initiative. And what happened is when a country in Islam, according to the Sharia law, when Islam conquer a country, it must turn its churches and synagogue into mosque. Why? Because that's a sign of victory. The cross is broken and the crescent is planted. And now what happened, this is called Rabat. Rabat is to now they bring more soldiers. They bring, they carry, number one for Dawah to Islamize a nation. And then to create a new fortress to conquer the state next to that country, to invade another, So what happened in Ground Zero, after they hit the two towers, building, Ground Zero Mosque, this is called Rabat. According to Sharia law, this is where they restructure. This is where they do more recruitment for terrorism. And now they can conquer more states from that place. This is equal to the Statue of Liberty. So now when we say, Sharia law is equal to the American Constitution, let's examine that. What is the right of the woman? If a woman goes to sue a man, said, this man raped me, woman has to provide four witnesses while the man has to provide two witnesses. If the woman found that, one of her witnesses is not kosher, then everything goes away. Now, let's say this woman got pregnant. Then by law, she is committed to stoning to death, while the man gets only 40 lashes and he can walk away. If a father, left $15,000 and he had son and daughter, the son gets $10,000, the daughter gets $5,000. When you marry, a man has to purchase you in Islam, and he has to pay for your dowry, and now you belong to him. So if you go back to your family, you don't belong to your family. Your family will beat you up, will send you back home. It is the right of the man, according to the Holy Quran. The generous Quran says, if your wife disobey you, beat her up. In another hadith by Muhammad, according to Sharia law, Sahih al-Bukhari or Muslim, the ninth series, it says, hang the whip and let the women see the whip all the time because you beat her until she submit to you. So this is, her life belongs to you. In the Pakistani culture, you have over 90% of Pakistani women are, circumcised. In the Egyptian culture, you have honor killing all over, and women is not worth anything. And when you look at different laws, when an area is a holy area, it's a Muslim area, you cannot build churches according to the Hami status, according to Sharia law. You cannot refurbish a church. You cannot refurbish a synagogue. You cannot do a dawah. You cannot do, apostolization. This is prohibited by Islam. And then over there, in Islam, the constitution of Islam, the Sharia law consists of all different things are completely, like freedom of speech, pursuit of happiness, liberty, thoughts to think for yourself. These are considered false god in Islam. So in Islam, the law is not above Islam, but the law is under Islam. So the highest rank will have to be the religion. So if Sharia law is part of America, it must be supreme over the culture. Does that make any sense?
Yes. I've been actually learning a lot the last couple of weeks. I had another guest. I don't know if you know him. His name's Usama Dakada, and he's been telling me a lot about the actual Quran, and it says how things like I don't remember the exact verses, but it'll say when you meet the infidel to strike his head, chop off his head, and a lot of people are trying to say, oh, it's a religion of peace, and I'm like, well, just from that one verse alone, that doesn't sound very peaceful.
I read to you from the Quran. You see, this is very important lesson for all Americans to learn about. Many Muslims says, no compulsion in Islam. Yes, the Quran said that, but this is before the Quran was abrogated, and no compulsion is for the Muslim, not for the infidels. So like for me, in Islam, according to Sharia law, if Sharia law in America, I'm an apostate and I must be lynched. That's mean chopped to pieces, my head chopped and dragged all over the city, you know, where everybody see that I'm apostate, which is I converted from Islam to something else. And the infidel, once they receive Islam, now if they leave Islam, then they're commended to death. That's what American people don't understand. But the important thing is when Muhammad lived in Mecca at the beginning, Muhammad was teaching a peaceful understanding religion. He's trying to be like Christ. And he modeled himself quite a bit like Christ. But what happened is after the 14 years that he was in Mecca and he found nobody learned from him, nobody wanted to do anything like he told them, what happened is his family shunned him out and he ran away to a place called Medina. At that time, Medina was, it's called Yathrib. Yathrib was a place where a lot of people who stopped the caravans, stole their money, killed the people, cheated, you know, lived in that area. And when he went over there, Allah abrogated everything. Abrogation meaning God changed his mind. He said, whatever I said before, I have changed my mind and I give you what is better right now because I understand what is better for your people. You know, the God of the Bible, the Muslims say we worship the same God. The God of the Bible said, I know the future from the past and the past from the future. God did not change his mind. But here in the Quran, God, Allah changed his mind because he found something better for his people because the things before did not work. And now he commanded him to live by the sword. So everything, this is in Arabic called an-nasikh wal-mansukh, you know, so which is abrogation. So therefore, whatever has been said before, it does not apply anymore, and now the new things replace all the old things. So what was the last surah? Surah number 4, 5, and 9. Number 9 is the surah of the sword, which is, it speaks about how to dominate the world. You know, so therefore, the hadith by Muhammad says, إِنِّي أُمَرْتُ أَنْ أَقَاتِلُ الشُّعُوبُ. I have been commanded to fight the people, the world. Until everyone says, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, there's no God but Allah, Muhammad, his prophet. And if they do not receive this, then their children, their monies, their women, their land, their government belong to me. The man. So what happened to the man? The men are killed. So this is what Muhammad commanded, you know, and until the whole world is being subdued. And then when you read the Quran, like these are from the Quran, you know, surah number 9. It says, fight and kill the disbeliever wherever you find them. Take them captive, harass them, lie in wait and ambush them using every strategy of war. So this is one of the commandments. That's from Allah, the God of Islam. Then you go to Quran 8 and 39. Says, so fight them until there is no more fitna. There's no more anything but Islam. And all will submit the religion of Allah alone in the whole world. That's what the Quran says. And then when you go, read from Muhammad hadith and it says, our onslaught will not be weak, a flattering affair. We shall fight long as we live. We will fight until you turn to Islam, humbly seeking refuge. We will fight not caring whom we meet. We will fight whether we destroyed ancient holdings and newly gotten gains. We have mutilated every opponent. We have driven them violently before us, and we commended by Allah and Islam. We will fight until our religion is established, and we will plunder them, for they must suffer disgrace. And if you read more and more and more, fight the unbeliever around you and let them find your heart, you know, but then it tells you, befriend them until you subdue them, you know. And so these are what's so-called, Imam Faisal, what he declared what's so-called at-taqiyya. At-taqiyya is what I said, the doctrine is permitted for Islam to lie to any culture until they subdue the culture. This is the Trojan horses that they are entering our culture.
Yeah, I learned, so I think the actual, maybe you're saying, I don't know if you say it, they say till they have the upper hand, like they're basically gaining victory.
Yes, it's in the Quran. It says, you know, when you have the, you know, when you're weak, don't fight, befriend them. And in Arabic, this is called hudna. This is where it's mentioned in the New Testament in the book of Revelations. When the Antichrist come about, he would not make a peace treaty with Israel. He would not make a truth with Israel. He make the Holy Bible says he'll make 7 years treaty. In Arabic, it's called Hudna. What is Hudna? Is according to Muhammad, you make a peace, and peace accord, but it's called Hudna, and it must be broken from the time you make it, and the expiration date is up to 10 years. And what is that supposed to do? Until they rebuild their army, they bring more food, more weapon, more strength, they take the injured out, and now what they do is they break that peace treaty and they start fighting again. So basically, you know, the Antichrist will break the peace treaty in 3.5 years and will come against Israel. And this is called Hudna, and Hudna is only in the Islamic religion.
So since you mentioned Antichrist, I was thinking about if you could explain maybe what people in Islam, what do they think about the origins of Allah, like where he came from, or the origins of man, and then also maybe their eschatology. If you could explain that a little bit, if you can.
Well, you know, this is big, and this is what we do. Kum Ministries, my ministry, it's an Aramaic word for the word arise. And this is where Jesus Christ stood before Lazarus' graveyard, and he said, Lazarus, kum, arise. And a new life was given to him. And he also went to Talitha. Talitha was dead. You know, that day when he arrived, they said, don't bother, Rabbi, she is dead. And he said, she's not dead, she's asleep. And he grabbed by the hand and he said, Talitha, kumi. And new life was given to her. So now what happened is with all this, you know, our heart desire is, number one, is to wake up the church to a radical Islamization of the world. The invasion, why? Because I was part of that invasion. And now my defect for such time as this is by the glory of God that he just opened my eyes by his light to do this. So now I bring everything from the other side of the world in the open, and we teach the church and the synagogues and the American government and the universities about the schemes and how the schemes are and how they work all together. So we teach everything. We even go to speak to Muslim organization if they allow us to, which is it was hard to do it the first time, and I never went again because they almost killed me at that time. But anyhow, with this, what happened is that everybody need to understand that even before Muhammad was born, the Arabian over there, the Arabs, worshipped over 330 gods. These 330 gods, they were actually, you know, right there in what's so-called Kaaba. Kaaba is in Mecca. It's the black square building where the Muslim goes there today and go to pilgrimage. This is a place where the whole Arabian world, they went over there and their, you know, their god lived over there. And the greatest god of all, his name was Hubal, which is the god of the moon, which is the greatest, you know. And they referred to their god as Allah. All their gods were referred to as Allah. They did not call their god Ilah, you know, which is, Allah is a word, you know, in that desert place, you know. In Arabic, everything is preceded by the letter A-L, which is if your last name is Jones, it'll be L. Jones. So if your name is Ilah, it will become Allah. So what happened is with this, you know, all these gods, you know, they refer to them as Allah. His father's name, Muhammad's father's name, his name was Abdullah, you know, and which is the slave of Allah. And so the deity pre-existed, you know, before Muhammad came, you know, the prophet of Islam. And then, you know, even before Muhammad was a prophet, what happened is they had the black stone, which is, you know, hung in his time on a Kaaba, on a corner of Kaaba, which is, it's still there until this day because it's a star that fell out of heaven. This is where God, you know, in Islam, they look, you know, I mean, in the Holy Bible, it says, Jesus said, and Isaiah said, I saw Satan falling like what? Like, you know, like lightning. So the deity pre-existed over there, and you know, it was loud and strong. But many of the Muslims today believe that Allah is the same God as the God of the Christian and Jews. You know, because the name originally came from the word Hebrew word called Elohim. Elohim is the God that is above all, God of heaven and earth. But nevertheless, you know, Satan, you know, declared himself in the Bible, in the book of Revelation. He said, I will ascend on a mount of assembly. I will ascend above the star of God. I will sit on a mount of assembly, enthroned. So he wanted to be a God, and he wanted to be equal to God. So many things are, they may look like, smell alike, feel alike, taste alike, but they ain't alike, you know. They are completely two different things. So those deities, you know, and even in the Quran, before it was abrogated, you know, some of those three gods, you know, Allati wal Uzza wal Munat, these were mentioned in the Quran, three statues, the goddess of the moons, the mother and the two daughters that they lived in Kaaba, in that square house. The Muslim, you know, did that, I mean, the Arabs at that time came and they did pilgrimage just like what the Muslim do today. They go seven times, exactly, and they worship, you know, and they fast, and they do the same thing, and they kill, you know, the lamb, the same thing for their sin. All of it is still the same thing, but today it's called Islam, while before it was Jahiliyyah, which is prior to Islam. So therefore, you know, in Islam, they want you, you know, to feel like, you know, Islam is the only true religion, which has abrogated all other religion. But the truth is, it's nothing like Christianity, nothing like Judaism, nothing like anything, you know. Our problem is really not with the Muslim. God of heaven and earth, Jesus Christ, died for the Muslim. We love the Muslim. The Muslim today, they are bought by the blood of Christ to come to Christ, to be saved and set free. But nevertheless, our issue is with Islam. My problem is with Islam because Islam destroyed some of my best years in my life and changed my life in a way where, I almost died many times, time after time after time. If it was not for the grace of God, I'd have not been alive today, you know, but that's why I live and tell my story. You say, what's in it for you, Kamal? You know, what are you getting out of this? Excuse me.
Okay.
Word of God says, it is for freedom I have set you free. The freedom that I know of today that I didn't have before. America today is the most privileged country. Our life that's been given to us is handed to us on a silver platter. We didn't have to fight for our life. Our ancestor fought for our life. When you go to Europe today, when you go to Libya, when you go to Egypt, when you go to different places, you see American soldiers that died in those places. You see American graveyard by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And even if you go to Saudi Arabia, if you go to Kuwait, if you go to Iraq, if you go to Kandahar, if you go to, you know, all those places, you see American men and women who fought and died. And that liberty that we have, it's very precious. Freedom is not for free. And when I look at all this, and I see the American people today, you know, the symbol of America is an eagle, but the American people acting like ostriches. They're still wearing different feather. You know, they're wearing feather, but it's different. Hiding in the head in the sand, and they are not standing for their countries. I come to fight for a country that I found God in. I found freedom. I found liberty. I found, you know, humanity, where I can be free, where I can be all I want to be, where I can rise and go high, you know, soar on high, where I can be all. I can speak my mind. I can live my life. So here's the thing. If, like, Faisal Abdur-Rauf, when I come to the United States of America and when I bring about slavery for our culture or bring about the lie of Sharia law, we invite you, Mr. Imam, to take it back to your country where you came from. Take it and practice it there where you can practice it for free. Don't come here and change our life. Don't change our culture. As a matter of fact, 17 countries in the world practice Sharia law. Saudi Arabia, there's no churches or mosques over there. There's nobody that can say, you know, speak their mind. If they find that you're Christian and you're practicing Christianity, you go to jail and many times you disappear. God only can help you. If your government doesn't ask for you, you die in a jail. If you're homosexual over there, your head is chopped off. If you steal, the first time your hand is taken off, the second time your foot is taken off, you wear your hand and your foot on your neck until they rot so you can smell your body, you know, what you did. If a child stole or, you know, did something, they break his hand. if you use the right left hand instead of right hand, you are corrected. They burn your hand like my mother did. You know, she was burning my hand, even, you know, trying to burn my private part just to change the right hand. It's scary. You know, in Iran today, you know, people just like that woman that you saw on TV, she just went and slept with somebody who she loves. They want to stone her to death. Life is changing all over the world. It's upside down. And this guy here is coming, want to bring Islamization to America in the name of Cordova Initiative, that nobody knows what the story behind it. If America doesn't start finding out what they are facing, we're going to lose our country very soon. Islamization is taking place, the infiltration, even to the highest rank in our government. It's in the Homeland Security. It is in our military, army, air forces. Look at what happened, you know, Major Nidal, Hassan. Look what happened with those other, you know, on last Christmas, the five Muslim soldier who poisoned, you know, in Fort Knox, where hundreds of thousands of soldiers were poisoning their food. Look what happened in Guantanamo Bay. They were, you know, those chaplain, they were spying and telling these Muslims what to say and what not to say, and telling, you know, the bad guys about what's happening here in America. Look what's happening in our jail system. Like, for example, the underwear bomber who just about to kill several hundred people on an airplane and bombed the city down under them. You know, what happened, the Patriot Act was not used against him, and he was sent home free. How about the guy who tried to bomb in New York not too long ago? It is upside down. Our world is being infiltrated, and American people must arise that November is coming about to make our voice heard and make the difference.
Yeah, I also, I had somebody, I was writing somebody in prison because I just decided to do that, to actually just go through and write somebody. And what happened is I was talking to him for a while, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I got a letter from a man who I think that he said that it's supposed to be his cellmate, and he was an Islamic guy, and all of a sudden he just writes me out of nowhere and then tries to tell me things and tries to convert me, and I'm thinking, this guy must have just snatched his mail and started writing me out of nowhere without even asking that man, because that other man did not tell me about him sending a letter beforehand. So it just shocked me that that man even did that out of nowhere. He just came out and wrote me a letter without even asking the other man. I think he probably stole his mail or something. And
well,
so that
we were dealing with a lady. She is from New York. And this lady she was married to this Muslim man. She converted to Islam. And then she came back after 2 years being married to him. She found out that he started beating her up and want to take over her children, and so she took the children and ran away. So she starts writing to a group like us, we called the FMU, Former Muslim United, and as she's writing to us, she starts writing nasty letters to us, you know, telling us all kind of things, and one day, one of the ladies, her name is Nani Darwish, picked up the phone and called her, and she said to her, you know, we tried to befriend you, why are you so mean to us? She said, I never wrote anything to you. I never said such a thing. You know, I ran away from my husband, took away my children because he was doing all this other stuff. He was even trying to play with the little girl. And so they found out that he was using her email and her identity to use it for his, you know, just a minute too late people like us. Like you saw today, you went to my website, they hacked my website with Islam.
Yes.
So you go like, this is their method of jihad. This is what they try to do. These kind of people are, you know, we need American people help to fight back. We need people to go to our website, help us with understanding ideas. We need prayers. We need the prayer warrior to pray for us. We need to let our voice be heard all over in that area, whether it's Act for America, whether it's churches, whether highway, byways, university. We need to come to your area. We need to talk about these issues. And, you know, they will not come and argue. They will come to shut us up. They will not try to debate because they know they don't have it, you know, altogether. And they know that they're a liar because when you ask them about this, and I'm not talking about the Muslim, I'm talking about radical Muslims. You know, we have to distinguish between the two, which is they are here in America, you know, specifically to seize the culture. You know, they will, you know, many women, be careful out there, because they want to marry you. They fall in love with you so fast. They will dump money on you. They will show you a favor. All of a sudden, they're your best friend, even without knowing you, because they want to ask you to marry them. Be careful, because what he's trying to do is get his citizenship to fight against this country.
Yes, I often get people, a lot of times they're from, like, Ghana and Nigeria. I don't know if they're actually Muslim or stuff, but there are a lot of people that will be, like, doing scams. They'll be, like, they'll write you off and they'll be, like, oh, you're so beautiful. I want to be with you. And so I'm, like, okay, out of nowhere, like, you just write this to me. And I would guess they're probably doing the same thing to women, the ones who are the Islamic extremists, and they're probably doing that to them, too. Like, all of a sudden. And one thing I was thinking one question I wanted to ask you before the hour's over is, because I actually think he is myself, but do you think the President Obama, do you think he is a Muslim?
Well, let's examine. You know, the Word of God says, you know them by their fruit.
Yes.
You know, so let's examine the fruit. You know, there's two kind of people. Are those who are fruitful, they produce, and those who are fruity, that they just think. You know, and so let's examine that and put it to the test. When the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America, you know, was taking place before he was running for president, what was he doing? He was putting his right hand over his left hand,
yes.
Pledge to the American flag, which is that in a Muslim it's called the Pledge to Islam. You know, and in Islamic world, you know. Then he destroyed National Day of Prayer. And then after he destroyed National Day of Prayer and condemned it, and now it's not legal in the White House, he declared Islam Day and Islam Month, September. September 11 was the biggest holiday, probably happened in September. Then the other thing is, you know, like his speech in Egypt. His speech in Egypt, Faisal Abdurrauf, Imam Faisal Abdurrauf, was speaking in Arabic country. He said, who wrote this speech for a president? Did the president write it or did I write it for him? I wrote that speech for him. I gave it to him. He gave him every word, word for word. What did he say? He said, America is no longer a Christian country. America is Muslim, Jews, Christian, just everything. He put it all together. So therefore, he declared Islam in there. Nevertheless, last Christmas on Friday, where did he go last Friday? You know, last Christmas on Friday. He went to the mosque to pray down in Washington, D.C. on Friday. It was on Friday. Christmas Day was on Friday. He went over there. The other thing is what he did in Ramadan just recently when he celebrated Fitr, you know, when they were breaking fast
yes.
every night. He's breaking fast with the Muslim, and they're coming from all over. And what happened? He backed up Ground Zero Mosque. You know, and when they asked him the second day, he said, I would not speak about the wisdom of that decision. What's the heavy? I'm going, what wisdom? And he keeps saying, Islam is heritage of the United States of America. It's been heritage. It's part of the American government. Well, yes, let's examine that. Is it in a heritage? Yes. Where does it go to? You know, this is where we find out we're fighting the Muslim Berber in the Mediterranean Sea, where they enslave an American people and English people and European people and sell them as slaves. This is the same people that they were selling us slaves to the United States of America, captured by the Muslim people. Jefferson, purchased the Muslim Quran, Holy Quran, and he studied it, and he found for the first time what is Islam and abrogation is all about. So therefore, to fight intelligently, he understood what he is fighting against. Even when the president was swearing to be a president, remember when the Bible fell before he put his hand on the Bible and they continued the ceremony without him swearing on the Bible? What is that all about? Who is holding the Bible? His wife. And right before he put his hand, it fell out of her hand, and they continued the ceremony without him. So when you look at all this, and now you're talking about socialism and what so have you, and socialism and Islamism, what happened is here, you know, it's really scary because all these laws are being bent. Sooner or later, Article 6 can be broken. What is Article 6? It's the heart of our Constitution, which is what? Article 6 is the heart of the Constitution where the religion, the religion, you know, the church, the separation between government and church. Now, if that is broken, the Constitution will be applicable to be a part of our American Constitution. The Islamic Constitution, Sharia law, is stronger and more stouter than our Constitution by Islamic-driven power. So sooner or later, will dominate our culture and take over our Constitution, just like what's happened in England. Over 80 Islamic courts right now in England, and what happened? The culture is split in half. Some Muslim, some, English. And if you kill your wife, if you kill your daughter, if you kill your sister, in Islamic law, this is honor killing. You are penalized and sent away home, free. You know, in Islamic culture, you know, if a Muslim killed an infidel like you, then all he has to do is pay for your, you know, body, you know. But if you kill him, you're condemned to death. So, you know, there is a lot of things that American people don't understand, that Sharia law and all this stuff, that, you know, if the Article 6 is broken and Sharia law is brought to our culture, what happened then? The hate crime bill will be introduced. That means your gun will be taken away. Your speech about Christianity or Judaism will be taken away. Now you have to submit your speech to the government before you speak about it. Even you have to pay penalty taxation to practice, you know, Islam or whatsoever. When you look at our medical health care bill right now, what happened is Islam are exempt from it. Islam, you know, now they have the dhahami status, so now they can live in our culture and go to our hospital, and our tax dollar will pay for them, and we would not be, you know, will be paying for them. This is so they become the leaders, and will become the slave, will become the subservient to them. When $60 million put out of everybody's pocket for abortion, whether we like it or not, this is commended in the Dahami culture to destroy children, non-Muslim. Just like what's happening right now, America is applying death for children abortion in Kenya, and that's against Constitution to bring about, you know, abortion in different country and make it, you know, part of this. Why is he taking that? Their culture is, which is 90% Christian. Why is he destroying that culture by make it mandatory to make, you know, abortion clinic? All this, when you see what's happening, is the writing is on a wall. He did not lie to us, you know, from the beginning. He said who he is. He said, if I have to fall back, I will fall back to my fathers, you know, religion of my fathers. What is the religion of his fathers? Is Islam. You know, he was born, you know, God knows where he was born, and he was, he lived his life as who he is, and now what happened is he want to bring about Islamization to this culture, you know, sooner or later, whether we like it or not. And this is where we say, no, we don't want Sharia law. We have our constitution where we can live free, and we can say freedom of speech is ours. When Sharia law comes in and the, hate crime bill comes in, the freedom of speech is gone. You're no longer able to practice your freedom.
Do you know anything about, like, how, I know that there's people, like, people that own part of, like, the Fox News network that are, like, and Muslims and probably other places, too. Do you know anything about that?
Well, here's what's happening. The invasion to our culture, to our country, is happening on every level. What level are these? You know, the government. So we see now the right hand and left hands of Janet Pelletano are Islamic, sworn Islamic, you know, radical to destroy our culture. Where is the organization mentioned? Is in a Holy Land trial. That's good for everybody to go Google that and see what it is. Their organization are sworn to destroy our American culture. And so now these are the right hand and left hand of Janet Pelletano of the Holy, you know, of Homeland Security. Then you have the all the other guys, you know, on different level from the FBI, CIA, the translator, the, you know, whatsoever, which is, you know, put there specifically for such time as this. Then when you have when you have the say your question one more time. I forgot the Wednesday.
Sorry. Yeah, it's I was asking about, do you know anything about how Muslims own media? I know that one person owns part of Fox News, and that's supposed to be conservative.
Yes, yes. Prince bin Talal, he's a prince of Saudi Arabia. He is, his specialty is controlling the airwaves, you know, the media. And, you know, this is in the book of Revelations, if you find that, you know. So he is the majority stockholder of Fox News, you know, of Fox News. And he just finished paying nearly 6% of Forbes magazine, which is another conservative, you know, a Christian magazine. So therefore, he's trying to control the best, you know, the head of, you know, a conservative media. And also, they're investing heavily in stock exchange. Like in Oslo, they bought 55% of Oslo Stock Exchange. And also in UK, they did the same thing. They're trying to purchase the stock exchange in America. And also, you know, today there are the majority holder, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN. Also, they're moving into the corporation, like from Apple, from, you know, you name it, every place, every corporation, Johnson & Johnson, they're buying everything. They're trying to subdue the culture from, you know, because this way they will own and they have the finances. And when they have the finances, they can control the culture, because if they pull out, the whole structure will fall overnight and the country can, you know, start to death overnight, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
a sleeping giant, like it's laying there, and then once it gets up, it's like everything's going to fall apart if they choose to do that. And one thing I did find out, too, about the same man that you mentioned, I played a video, well, it's the audio from a video, like I think it was a week or two ago. He made a deal with Michael Jackson. It's this thing called Kingdom Entertainment, and it's a part, it does – like almost everything. It does all kinds of different entertainment. It even gets into the children's entertainment. So they're trying to do that too. They're trying to get into what Usama, I think it was Usama Duck, or maybe another guest I had. He said if you look at even Aladdin, that movie Aladdin, that has a lot of Islam stuff in it. And one of the characters like even said something in what would be the, I don't know, the Arabic or whatever the language is, he said something about Allah and stuff like that.
Yes, so many things happening, unfortunately. And here's what's happening in our world. You know, we are living in a culture that we tasted the goodness of God, and we're living in a place where it is, you know, glorious. There's no other nation lives like us. Even the kings of the world don't live like us. We have some of our homes in here, and that mid-class are like palaces. So basically, we are not willing to let go of that blessing and of that, you know, prosperity. So therefore, we became enslaved to our culture. And what I mean by that, to our home, to our jobs, to our income, to our bosses, to our automobile. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the majority of American families are paying tithe and offering to the credit card companies, to different places, and most of their life is owned by a bank. The banking system today is being bought by Islamic culture, which is sooner or later the Muslim will have Sharia law banking in the United States of America. You will lose everything you have, whether you like it or not, because it's going to be brought down one way or another. So the decision that we have to make is, one day our children and grandchildren, when we die and they are left with the giants and they don't know what to do, we as a culture, we have failed. We have failed our future. We have failed our children and grandchildren because we decided to stand for ourselves, for our life, for what's important to me. I became the king of selfishness, and now it's what's in it for me. Even church, people go to churches because it says what the church has to offer. I'm here to tell you, you are to go to church and serve and love God with all your heart. The church is not a perfect place, but it's your job. It's our job as Americans to serve and lift up the name of God on high and give him praises day and night. And if our culture doesn't wake up and make the difference, let go, you know, let go of what we have. You know, God could not give us what he has for us unless we let go of what we're holding against him and against our future, our children, our culture, and our country. And by doing so, we can change the world just by little words, by voting, by speaking out loud, by telling everybody, you know, on our sphere of influence, what we want and how we want it. We are the people. This culture is by the people, from the people, of the people. And it is not about, you know, somebody who can shape our world while our world is set in, you know, the way it is. It's not in concrete anymore. Freedom is not for free. When you look at the American flag and you see that red color is bought by price. And it's the blood of men and women who died for freedom for the world and for this nation. And it is Christ who gave his blood in the first place. To live is Christ and to die is gain. And Patrick Henry says, give me liberty or give me death. Now, for me, coming from the other side of the world, I understand this. But America, if it doesn't wake up, we're going to come to rude awakening, stronger and bigger than ever before. That may cost us a lot of life. But if we wake up this second and we start making a difference for this November and start voting Jesus Christ, don't vote Republican, don't vote Democrat, don't vote independent, vote the kingdom, vote Jesus Christ. And here's a question you have to ask these people who are running for office. Is Islam peaceful religion? That's the first question. If they said yes, you know they are misinformed, they have no idea, they're just politicians. Do we worship the same God? If they said yes, you know that they are misinformed and they have no idea and they're just politicians. The question has to be come with understanding. And that understanding, we must tell them what we want. And overall, we are the presidents. We are the lawyers. We are the Congress. We are the Constitution makers. We are the senators. We are the House reps. We are the city councils. We are the sheriff. We are the police. We are the judges. God, people, start running for office and make place. God has a plan for you to prosper you, to bless you, to show you future, and that future is ready to happen if you allow him. Let go of those little petty things and take on the great things. You know, the great things are just about to happen. You know, for me and my house, we will worship the Lord. It's a decision we made.
Yeah, one thing I was thinking also when you're talking, before, like, I had sort of a defeatist mentality for a while, and I was thinking, oh, they just choose this and choose that, whoever they want. But then I saw someone from, they were showing that some people from the Tea Party, that the actual people they were supporting were actually doing well, and I was like, whoa, somebody can make a difference. Like, it's not just, like, everything's just fixed and everything. Like, somebody can do something if they really want to try and do it. It can be done, and especially with God, because we have him on our side. You pray for things, and also I was thinking with what you said about the church. That's very important too, because even though like in the center of the church is actually the people more, but the actual church building is still important too, because I see a lot of people on the internet, they'll be saying, like, oh, I don't want to go to organized religion. I just want to do it by myself. And I'm like, I'm thinking, if you're really Christian, you should be wanting to go. And even God says in the Bible to don't stop going. Don't give up meeting with each other. Because I was thinking just about what you're saying, that if they fail to go and they don't do their job and how they're supposed to be doing, I think a lot of Muslim people will be glad to fill their places and they'll take it over instead of them being there where they're supposed to be doing their job. The Muslim people will take it over gladly.
And it's already happening, Melissa. You know, you see more Muslims, sheriffs, governors, senators. They're well funded and they are sent here with a purpose, and they are just, as soon as they get citizenship, they can do whatever. I mean, look at Arnold Schwarzenegger. He did what he had to do in California, and he's been voted, you know, all this time. And they can do the same thing. The Word of God says, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. And when we don't understand what we're facing, we need to come to the basic, you know, the basics of life. And that basic of life is read the Word of God and understand what God is all about. It is one, statistically, every 5.5 days is new mosque is open in the United States of America. Every 5.5 days, Muslim centers are open in the United States of America. Those Muslim centers are Supreme Court, Sharia Supreme Court. They're ready to be changed overnight when they're ready. The Islamic centers, you know, the Muslim mosques, you know, many of them, great, huge number used to be churches that they bought and converted to mosque. Even Billy Graham Church in North Carolina was bought and, you know, changed, and now it's a mosque, you know. And so what's happening is they're changing the culture little by little, like what happened in New York just recently, how they bust hundreds of thousands of Muslim right before as Ramadan was about to start, and they blocked the streets. That was done on purpose. In France, the Muslim did the same thing. And when they asked them, why did you do such a thing? You know, you could have prayed in your cities. They said, we'll let you know that we are in your capitals, and we are here to stay, and we are about to change your culture. Get used to us. You know, in Spain, the Muslim are trying to take over the culture, you know, and there's one of the big churches over there that the Muslim were, you know, the church is closing its door and the Muslim were trying to buy it to turn it to a mosque. So what the Spanish did, they were so clever, they took pigs and they slaughtered pigs and desecrated the ground, you know, with pig's blood. In the Muslim world, you know, when it's, you know, blood, you know, pigs, you know, blood is on the ground, it's not sacred anymore, it's not holy anymore, so therefore it's desecrated and they cannot build mosques. These people know how to fight over there, so the Muslims stopped building, you know, their mosque over there. You know, we have to think outside the box and start thinking, you know, what can we do to save our culture? Think your culture as your child. I will give my life for my child. You know, something, nothing, not, you know, freedom is not for free. You know, to fight for our culture is the right thing. You know, it's your constitution. Use it before you lose it. Because sooner or later, you may be told how to live a Muslim life. And if you don't like it, you go to jail. And you go over my dead body. Well, that may happen, you know, if you don't like it later on, maybe too late. So basically, we need to make our voices heard and step forward and make the difference, because this is a warning sign from God himself. Make the difference right now before it's too late. We can change it. The wind is in our sails still. We are a sleeping giant. If America wake up, if America, this giant wake, you know, become awake, the whole world will be scared, because that's the only thing that held back the flood of, you know, enslaving the world, you know, by, you know, the religion of Islam.
Yeah. I think also, I think secondary is education, either learning really what the Quran says and what Islam stands for, what's it about. But I think the primary one is actually preaching the gospel, because the gospel, like it says, is the power to change the person from to knowing God, and that's going to change their hearts, and changing hearts is to because then they'll love God, and they'll love the people of God, and they won't want to kill them.
Well, you know, here's the thing. The Great Commission was given to us. He said, go in my name. Go in my name. Don't kill them. He said, love them. If your enemy is hungry, give him something to eat. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. He said, love your enemy and pray for those who hate you and bless those who spitefully use you. That's what Jesus Christ said. If we start using our Christianity, churches will not be shut down. We'll have more Muslim on our side, you know. And if we start sharing our love, these people will see something that is not hateful, that is doable and shareable, and they see the tangible fruit of our living God that is not dead but alive, and he will work with them, heal the sick, and do all kind of things, which is, in Islam, it's not, you know, it doesn't happen. So therefore, but it is, until we do something about it, you know, it's not going to happen. It is, you know, the Word of God says, if my people who are called by my name will humble their self and pray and seek my face and return from their wicked ways, then we will they will hear from heaven, then we will heal their land, then we will forgive their sins. So it is about really obedience. Obedience is better than sacrifice. To love the Lord with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength. You know, so this is what it comes all about, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. So now, when we share those commandments and we show truth and start showing the Muslim a better way, because many of the Muslims have not tasted the goodness of God that you have, we will see things changing. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You live either, you know, in bondage or you live in freedom. That's a choice everyone has to make, you know. And there are many Americans right now are waking up finally, and they are making a difference. You know, this is the time, and this is the hour. We can change it right in November and send the message back. This is the home of the land of the free and the home of the braves.
Well, Kamal, I want to thank you for joining us because our show is over. Actually, it went over a little bit over, but that's fine with me. Thank you for joining me, and I do pray for you and your family and whoever, your friends, that they be protected and that they know, if they haven't known Christ, that they know him too. I mean, thank you for joining me so much.
Well, invite us to your city. We'd love to come and share with you the gospel, good news, and Jesus is alive. He's not dead. And we love you, America. We'll be there for you, Melissa, anytime you need me. I'll be there with you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it a lot.
God bless you all.
Bye. God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
So that was Kamal Salim. His website, KamalSalim.com. That's KamalSalem. He also has one called Koom Ministries, KOOME. Recently got hacked, though, so I hope that they'll be able to fix that and make it more secure. Thank you for listening to Truth Be Told Radio. I want to play one more thing before we leave so that to sum up that, like I said, one of the best ways to fight against Islam in regard to also what he said, all the words he said, is to preach the gospel and let people know about Jesus and the love, like he said, the love. That's just so amazing to show that the love, God's kindness can move a hard heart. And that's one of the things that I saw with his story. And here's a summary of, if you don't know the gospel, this is a quick way to learn it. And also see needgod.com if you don't know about the God of the Bible. And here's a quick little reminder.
Are you good enough to go to heaven? Let's see. Have you lied, stolen, blasphemed, or looked with lust, which God sees as adultery? If you have, then you're a lying, thieving, blasphemous adulterer at heart. And if you are guilty, you will end up in hell. But God sent Jesus to die on the cross for you and defeat death. You broke God's law, but Jesus paid your fine. God can now legally dismiss your case. Repent, trust in Jesus, and God will give you everlasting life. NeedGod.com.
In summary, that's the kindness of God is. Yet while we were sinners, when we were doing these things, and even like him, maybe we weren't terrorists, but we were doing evil against God. We were lying, we were stealing. These are things that God says not to do, because even at the essence, it's showing love for your fellow human to not do these things against them, to lie, steal, to kill, covet, want something that's not theirs. And that's just, it's the love of God to not do these things. And so when we do, we are committing sin against him, against people, against us, maybe even against our own body. But the love is that while we were sinners, that Jesus died for us, and he took our payment for our sins upon the cross when he went up there, and he took all those sins. But what God tells us to do to receive that payment, it's like you have to receive the gift, like just like you can't just like say, oh, I have a gift and just leave it there. He tells us to repent, to turn from our sins, turn from all the sins that we've done, and decide to follow him, turn towards him, and trust in him alone that he did on that cross. They paid as Jesus, as in the body of a man, and he lived on earth. He was born of a virgin, then Mary. That was so that he would not have the sin of man passed on, the one that's passed on by Adam, and he lived a perfect life. Meaning like sinless. He did not sin, you know, once, and so he was a worthy sacrifice to die on a cross for our sins, just like they did in the Old Testament, or also known as the Torah. Like they would shed the blood of animals for forgiveness of sin, and the Bible basically says there's no forgiveness of sin without the shedding of blood, and so that God himself, he went onto the cross and shed his blood as a human man, Jesus, and then he died, and he resurrected. He brought himself back to life on the third day, and went back to heaven and said he'd come back. Like Kamal said, that he told us to go out, the people who that are Christians, to tell others about this news, the good news. They call it. The bad news is people sin. The good news is Jesus paid their fine. But repent and turn from sin and trust in Jesus alone for salvation, and you will be like a new creation. He will turn you from death to life. He'll turn you from going to hell. That's where the payment of a person who decides not to receive the payment of God, they receive the payment for their sins. This is the wages of sin and death, like the payment. You want to pay for your own sin, then you will have to do that for eternity. But kindness of God is that he paid for it, and you just have to receive that payment and trust in him alone. And then he will make you a new Christian, and you'll want to follow God. You'll want to know more about him. You'll want to read the Bible. The Bible won't be boring. It'll be revealed to you. It'll be your eyes wide open, like happened to me in February 16, 2004. And you'll learn more and more about him, and you'll want to be with him. And the payment that Jesus paid, you'll be able to go to heaven instead of hell, instead of a place of torment. You'll be with him. And then even here, the starting of the new life is that we get to know him and read his word, and also know others that know him, which are other Christians, and experience the love and share the love with other people. And like you said, it's a great reminder that even love, even a little kindness, like Jesus said, even said, like, give them, like, if you gave them a cup of water, you do this in his name, and that's the way that you're showing love for him, showing love for your fellow man, and just showed you the kindness that he experienced from these Christians that were doing the true thing they're supposed to do from the Bible, that he that helped in him being converted, because it just showed him that, wow, all these other things that they said, saying that they're evil and they're like hateful, and saying that the Christians were like the other way, that it was opposite of what he had been taught. And so show the love of God, and if you aren't Christian and you don't know him, you can go to a website to take this test that I've been saying about, like, about the bad news and good news. It's needgod.com to find out how to become a Christian and know him. And thank you for listening to Truth Be Told Radio. Usually I'd play the ending song, but my switchboard has gone blank because it does that after a while after the show's over. But instead, I'll just thank you for listening to my show. And also, remember, you can listen to the archives on iTunes, all the other shows, because you're probably listening to it already, because it's already past the end of the show right now. But if you want to listen to other shows, there's other shows about Islam, and one went through Selma Dakadak, and that was, I think, episode 75 and 76 last time. I had a man named Grady Rice, Christian singer, and I'll probably have more people about the truth of Islam, because very interesting, and it also teaches us what gives us tools to fight against the evils of Islam and show you that people, it isn't a true religion of peace. It's against everything that's peace and freedom. Even Kamal giving an example. So once again, if you want to find out more about Kamal Salim, if you can go to his website at kamalsalim.com. That's K-M-A-L, that's his first name, Kamal. And then Salim is S-A-L-E-E-M, kamalsalim.com. And his main website, ministry website is KoomMinistries.com, and that's K-O-O-M-E. I think it's .org, actually, but we'll check Google or something like that, either way. It's KoomMinistries.com, and K-O-O-M-E, that's the name. He said it's Koom means arise, like when Jesus told Lazarus to arise, like, to come back from the dead. And his book, in case you want to know more, he said a lot in his on our show. But if you want to see the full story, The Blood of Lambs is the book. It's by him, Kamal Salim, The Blood of Lambs. Check that out. Probably Amazon or anywhere that you could get a book. And please read that and share it with other people. Just share, other than the good news, gospel, share the truth about Islam and the bad and the good and everything, like warts and all, so that people can learn and fight against the evil and the evil one. And this is just one of his tools, is Islam. There's so many more other things, but that's one of them. And like you said, even Satan, he tried to counterfeit God. So they will say a lot of things probably to sound like even Christianity, but know the truth that it is wrong. It's just evil. It's not of God, and it's going against us to even try to get rid of our freedom. And we need to keep freedom in America, not so we, like you said, not just so we could like have good stuff and cars and things and food, even, or also, even though that's not really bad in itself, but we need to use our freedom to promote the gospel and share the truth about God, about Islam, about false religion, about the true Christ of the Bible, and so that we can keep it here, freedom, so we could still keep preaching the gospel and keep people, helping people to go to be with God, to go to heaven and not hell. And also, even though a secondary thing is changing their lives, just you could see the change of Kamal himself. And thank you for listening again, Truth Be Told Radio. Find out our archives, iTunes, for free, and also here on Blog Talk Radio. All of them are for free, and please download them, even this one, if you want to share it with people. Share all the downloads. They're for free. You're allowed to share them. I gave permission to share them, and even if you want to use them for sound bites, maybe on your own website, just please keep it, like, don't twist it and make it different than it is. Like, but if you, like, want to just cut it and make it short and use parts of it, that's fine. But just keep it with what it was intended to say. Thank you for listening. Find out more about us at truthbetoldradio.com, and me, my personal website, Smiles and Stuff, that smile, like, you know, a smile on your face, S-M-I-L-E-S and A-N-D, Stuff, S-T-U-F-F.com, smilesandstuff.com. I'm on Facebook. We have a new page, account specifically for Truth Be Told Radio. It's Truth Be and then Told Radio. Made it into like a first name, kind of last name thing. And also, there's another page on my other account, on my personal account. It's Truth Be Told Radio. It's a page for it on there. So you can see that on Facebook also. And if you want to see my page, add me, Melissa A. Cantola, and M-E-L-I-S-S-A, that's Melissa, and then A, like the initial A, and Cantola is spelled C-A-N-C-H-O-L-A, C-A-N-C-H-O-L-A, Melissa A. Cantola. And all that's on with most of my, whatever the new page is on truthbetoldradio.com, so you can see my information there. I have different Twitter accounts, one for my personal one and also for this show. And so you can see that stuff on truthbetoldradio.com, truthbetoldradio.com. I want to also redesign the page, so if anybody's listening and they're like a Christian web designer or just a web designer that helps people out who don't have that much money, please contact me. You could contact me here on the Blog Talk Radio or also at my personal web address, bondservantforjesuschrist@gmail.com. And once again, it's like bond, B-O-N-D, servant, S-E-R-V-A-N-T, the number 4, and then Jesus, J-E-S-U-S, Christ, C-H-R-I-S-T, at Gmail, gmail.com. bondservantforjesuschrist@gmail.com. Thank you for listening again, and join us next week on Truth Be Told Radio, where we do preaching and teaching from a biblical perspective, and we'll have lots of good guests and things, interviews. And next week, I think we're actually featuring, there's a thing called Deeper 2010, and that was with the ministry from Wretched Radio and Way to Master and Living Waters and different people from there got together, and my co-host, Skyrim, I was going to have him on today, but ended up just having a lot of questions and talking to Camille today. And what he did is he interviewed some people and got video and audio, and he's working on that right now. And he interviewed one of the person named Carrie, and she goes by Lizzie Paul in the Wretched chat room, wretchedradio.com. And he got an interview with her, and she does singing, and I think it's quite nice. It's pretty, and it's also clever, and it has biblical themes, and also, you know, one of her songs is an anti-abortion song, but a lot of times people just call it for short the abortion song. And so if you want to check out her, let me get the name real quick. It's her name is Carrie Coolidge Atala. Carrie Coolidge Atala. That's Carrie spelled K-A-R-I. And then Coolidge is C-O-O-L-I-D-G-E. And Atala is A-T-A-L-L-A. She's on Facebook, and also I think she has her own website. She has a fan page on Facebook too, so check out that, and you can get her, maybe even just Google it, you can get her songs and or just to listen to them to hear example. And please, if you like it, support her, buy some of her songs. And also another person that I had like on earlier, they have wretchedharmonies.com. Wretchedharmony.com is a website for it's for if you want to, it's kind of like, it's not your everyday site, it's a site, they more kind of want it to be more like, what you call is, how do you say it, it's courtship. They want them to, people be Christian and learn about God and not just be casual, and they want people who are true Christians and want to find other Christians that are interested in theology and just being serious about God, even though all Christians should be serious about God. But they want to connect people who are like that. And if you're single or not, maybe tell other singles that are, go to wretchedharmony.com, wretchedharmony.com. That's WRETCHED Harmony. It's kind of like a play on eHarmony, but it's wretchedharmony.com because there's this thing called Wretched Radio and Wretched TV. If you find out about that, then you'll find out why they call it that. And so please check that out. Please tell other people, other Christians about wretchedharmony.com. They have an extensive questionnaire, but it's just to prove that, you know, they're getting real Christians and not people that are just go on there and make trouble or be fake and invade it. So please check that out. It's a long questionnaire, but it's totally worth it if you really want to find someone who's a Christian and wants to be true to God and know God, and you'll find somebody, hopefully, there. I pray if you want to do that, and if God's desire for that. Please pray for us, even though I should be asking this before. Pray for us, our show. Pray for me, because, you know, everybody has temptations and things, and we need prayer, and just even in daily life. And like you said, I think sometimes it's easier to show disdain than the love of Krishna, love of God, what we're supposed to do. So please pray for me a lot, and pray for my coach, Guy Reynolds. He would get me on, but I end up not bringing him on, and also I think his phone cut off or something. I'm still thankful for him for being my coach anyways, and also helping me out today. And my family, I thank God for them, and my friends and everybody. I pray that you know God and that he makes himself known to you. So ultimately that we will all be in heaven. Like you said, I do have love for people. Maybe I might show disdain because of evil, but I really do want them to know God. I want them to good things for them. In case I have shown you different, please forgive me. I may come out not that way, but it's not what I meant to do. So thank you for listening to me, and please continue listening, and also tell others, because I think there's so much even so far on my show that they can learn, or one thing even about Islam and about God. So tell other people about us. We're on blogtalkradio.com/truthbetoldradio. That's TRUTHBETOLD radio, RADIO. And if you have any, I know I've gone longer than I expected, but I just want to let you know, if you have any ideas for a guest, or you are a person that has something to promote, or Christian, anything like that, please email us, and you could go to, even you could put, go to our website and have my email there. I didn't mention it earlier, but if you didn't hear that, go to my email, go to my Facebook page. Just please write me, because it's good to have guests. I think it makes the show more richer, and then there's so much to learn. Look how much we learned about from Kamal Saleem today. Just so much a reminder to love people, and even that can show be a gateway, a road to them learning about God and the true God of the Bible, about being Christian and Jesus Christ. And so if you have anything like that you like to promote, or a person, you know, other people that would like to I invite you to be on our show. And thank you again for listening to Truth Be Told Radio. Find out more about us at truthbetoldradio.com. And until next week, I want to say, even though it's Todd's Todd Friel from Retro Radio, his tagline, I like it. I'm just going to say it. I like it. It says, go serve your king. And even that's what Kamal reminded us today to do that. So thank you for listening. And show people the love of Christ. Bye-bye.